The fleet of choppers dropped Roxon and Archer off at Fort Dobrynin, near what had once been Chicago. The Windy City had been hit with 220 megs, and was now just a pair of immense craters filled with a swampy scum in which nothing grew. The Red Army command of the fortress had been radioed about the capture of the Doomsday Warrior, and the entire complex was abuzz with excitement. If it was indeed Roxon, the top brass of the 100,000-man Russian force would all be sitting pretty. The intelligence chief, Colonel Pastrok, sat at a large wooden table with a single chair on the other side.
Sit down.
I'd rather stand.
Guards. Excellent. Now sit him in the chair. Now, care for a cigarette?
I don't smoke.
Very well. Name?
John Doe.
Come now. We know you are Ted Roxon. Let's not play games with one another. The more you cooperate, the less painful it will be for you. That I promise you. As an officer of the Imperial Russian Army.
There are graveyards of Americans who listen to your bull. The slave labor, the mass graves, the spies, the treachery. I've seen too much to even think of cooperation. Why don't you just kill me and get it over with? Otherwise, I might just escape from here.
Kill you? Oh no, Mr. Roxon, that will never do. You're in for quite an extended period of interrogation. Or should I use the less glamorous term, torture? When we can get inside that mutant head of yours, I'm sure we'll find out wonders. Not to mention the location of half the free cities in this hellhole of a country. Your capture may well signal the beginning of the end of your rebel forces. Take him away for now. Put him in maximum security cell 3. I don't want any other prisoners anywhere near him. Clear out the whole block. Just have this Roxon and that foul-smelling creature that was captured with him in there. Separate cells. I want 10 armed guards in there at all times. This man is not what you would call a normal prisoner. We'll be back for you soon, Roxon.
The Doomsday Warrior looked around his cell, solid as they come. A video camera on the ceiling swung slowly around, transmitting pictures of every foot of the cell and its occupant to technicians in a control booth several floors above. They really weren't taking any chances with him. Rock heard the moan and rushed forward against the bars. About 30 feet down the cell block, Archer was coming too. They had apparently shot him full of drugs before daring to release him from the netting. The huge man stood up, wobbly, and saw Rock. A smile crossed his black-bearded face.
Roxon!
He seemed overjoyed that Rock was still alive. Archer had a kind of magical belief in the Doomsday Warrior's ability to survive. If Rock was around, anything was possible. They were fed after a few hours, not too tasty, but food nevertheless. Roxon wondered if they were drugged, but then shrugged his shoulders and ate the meat and potato stew down. Whatever they were going to do, they would do. Archer gobbled down his helping in seconds and held the bowl out through the bars for more. Several hours passed, with the guards smoking cigarettes and playing cards at a small table in the center of the corridor that ran past the rows of green-painted cells. At last, Colonel Pastrok returned, accompanied by a dozen armed guards.
You! Time for some fun.
Good. I was getting bored.
Roxon was marched through several long, brightly lit hallways to a large room filled with what were obviously torture implements. A white-smocked man stood rubbing his hands together in delighted anticipation of the time they were about to spend together. Although the smock had been washed and bleached, Rock could see flecks of pale red, blood from the torturer's past victims.
Ah, Mr. Roxon. So glad you could make our little party.
And I'm so glad I could come. I hope I'm not too late. Have all the guests left?
There's always room for one more. Please do be seated.
The guards placed Roxon down on a long board and cuffed his hands to hooks on each side. Rock breathed out deep, going into a semi-meditative trance where his mind could detach from the pain his body would feel. He felt no fear, just a longing for Kim.
Now, what kind of pain would you like to begin with? An appetizer, as it were, or the main course? Somehow I feel that tonight we should give you a demonstration of the full range of our accessories. Assistance! Give me the whip!
It hung on a wall which was filled with every type of crude instrument of pain, from bull whips to hammers, knives to scalpels, masks with spikes inside of them, bludgeons, needles, and shiny mechanical devices that looked quite incomprehensible and quite dangerous.
Whips are so old-fashioned, but they do hurt. This particular whip is called a cat of nine tails. Was originally created by the British Royal Navy to exact severe physical punishment. At the end of the nine tails are quarter-inch razors, and the tails themselves are woven in with bits of broken glass. But all of this is just numbers. Its effectiveness is much more obvious when demonstrated.
The Doomsday Warrior's khaki shirt and flesh tore under the onslaught, but the mutant skin didn't bleed. The cuts had not reached his protected arterial and nervous system set inside the skin nearly half an inch deeper than the average Homo sapiens. Roxon pulled his consciousness up from his body into his mind. He was floating free of the physicality that was Ted Roxon. The whip bit into the broad, muscular back again and again, cutting the shirt to tatters. Cuts covered the Doomsday Warrior's flesh, and at last, blood began creeping out through gashes that had been torn two or three times.
Ha ha! I've struck pay dirt, have I?
Have you started yet?
I'm bored with this. Assistance, bring me the prod. Yes, the prod will make a nice main course.
One of the assistants took down a long cylindrical-shaped device and brought it over to Rock's tormentor, who turned a dial on the pain machine up to the red danger level.
I don't see why we should waste time with preliminaries. I'll just set it to a maximum and see what we can get out of you. Well? Where is Century City? Tell me and the pain will stop. What's that?
Mary. Mary had a little lamb.
Ah, the hypnotic suggestions placed in the Free Fighter's skulls. Perhaps I can cut through them, eh? Century City, where is...
It tickles, huh?
I will not be teased like this! You're off!
Don't kill him, you fool! Or it's your life, too.
Is that all? I must admit I'm disappointed. Little girls from the Free Cities could take this much. There must be something more.
Yes, Mr. Oxen. Yes, indeed, there is something more. Something of a whole different dimension. Assistance! Bring in the Mind Breaker. I've been dreaming of this day, Mr. Oxen. My name will enter the history books as the man who turned the ultimate American into the ultimate traitor. And here it is, the Mind Breaker. We are going to move you. The guards are instructed to shoot your knees out if you resist.
The guards uncuffed the Doomsday Warrior and half-carried him toward the chair. They quickly tied him into the black shiny seat and lowered the helmet from which dropped two steel prongs tipped with emeralds that would soon emit pinpoint laser beams that would burn into his skull.
First, they vaporized the skull bone itself, Mr. Oxen. Then they rip into the brain tissue, erasing all memories of loyalty, or friend, or enemy. We know just the right sections to burn out. And it hurts. It hurts horribly. Or so I've heard.
I told them to cut that damn thing off. Who the hell is this? Don't you know we're... Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Immediately, sir. Absolutely, yes, sir.
Now you will know the truth.
Stop! Stop! Stop the machine!
What are you doing? I am in charge of this room.
You fool! That was General... President Zhabnov on the phone. He knows Roxanne's here and wants him immediately flown to Washington. He said if there's a mark on his body, we'll all pay.
The gathered officers and the torture crew looked at one another nervously, and then at Roxanne. They quickly released him from the chair, pulling the mindbreaker up away from his head.
Oh, sorry about that. The president wants to see you.
President Zhabnov sat inside his embattled White House, his manicured hands resting on the cherry table before him. He stared across at Roxanne, the ultimate American about whom he had heard so much. He glanced nervously over at the giant, foul-smelling Archer, who was seated between four guards of the elite White House Legion. The president waited for Rock to speak, and when he didn't, at last spoke himself.
Welcome to the capital, Ted Roxanne.
The American capital is now out west.
Ah, yes. That is what you rebels say. Where, Roxanne? Where is this so-called Century City?
That would take the fun out of your little treasure hunt if I told you.
Admirable, admirable. You are shot full, my assistants tell me, of paralyzing mind drugs that would make any of us talk. And yet you bear the effect without apparent difficulty. I intend to study this brain of yours. Perhaps if my scientists dissect... Excuse me, gentlemen. Yes?
It is good to find you at your office, President Zhabnov.
Your Excellency!
Yes, yes, let's dispense with the formalities, nephew.
Yes, grandfather. And what do I owe the pleasure of hearing your voice?
I understand you have stumbled upon some good luck. You have captured Roxanne, correct?
Grandfather, through diligent, meticulous investigation and the full commitment of my forces, I have indeed captured, at great losses, the famous...
Yes, yes, nephew, what luck. Where is he?
Here, Your Excellency. He is being probed with SA-77 drugs for information as to the whereabouts of their famous Century City, but...
Yes, I know they don't work. Don't bother me with details, and don't hurt him.
Excellency?
I said don't hurt him. Feed them well, take them off the mind drugs. I want them flown over here to Moscow, to the Kremlin, within 24 hours.
But...
Get them over here, and quick! There have been changes in the world situation, for the worse. Fighting is going on everywhere. If a truce of some sort could be worked out with these annoying American free fighters, we could deploy some of your forces elsewhere and give more of our time to countering that madman Kilov.
Redeploy my forces? But we are already stretched...
Stop repeating every word I say, nephew. Do as I say. I'll put Rahala on the phone, and he will arrange the details of the transfer of this Roxanne and his fellow rebel to Moscow. Rahala is more than my servant now. He is a trusted advisor.
Grandfather! How can a servant possibly...
Do not question my decisions, nephew. You are making me grow angry. Do as I command. I have a good future planned for you. Since Kilov has rebelled, you are the one most likely to succeed me now. And I am old. But I must have your unquestioned obedience until then. And you must accept Rahala like a brother. He saved my life. Do you understand?
Yes, Your Excellency. Thank you for your confidence.
Roxanne's keen mutant ears had picked up much of the conversation. He was being tossed around like a hot potato. Just when his future seemed so bleak. Very interesting. Of course, once he was in Russia, it would be incredibly difficult to get out, but the possibilities... Suddenly, he was enjoying his capture tremendously. There were nearly 200 seats inside the huge Ilyushin 78 ramjet, but only Roxen, Archer, a dozen guards, and the plane crew got aboard. The stewardesses were bulky Russian women in drab gray suits and low black shoes with stern, potato-like faces. The stewardesses strapped Rock and Archer into their seats at the tail section of the plane. The guards sat in front, behind, and in the seats on each side of them. They were taking no chances.
We're about to take off. I'd keep the seatbelt on if I were you.
Yeah, well, I'd rather not have a red tail.
This ramjet's a bit different than the jumbo jets of pre-war. The thrusters will soon take us into the stratosphere.
Sure enough, 5 minutes later, the engine shut off once they hit the thinner air high above the Earth and caught the global jet stream. The chunky stewardesses brought them tasty caviar spreads and sandwiches without crusts, and good, thick, rich Colombian coffee, black as midnight. Archer picked up 5 of the tiny sandwiches at a time and swallowed them down without apparently tasting their delicate, subtle flavors from around the world. Rock savored each bite, better than the slop they'd been given in the prison.
Excellent. Now, out for some scenery.
Rock nearly gasped as he took in the view below. They were in space itself. They looked to be nearly 20 miles up, and the curve of the horizon above, with stars that dotted the sky, was slow and beautiful. He had known the ramjets flew high, but this...
No! What is it, Archer?
Archer pointed to his groin and made a pained face.
I think he wants to use your gentleman's facilities.
I think that can be arranged. You can stand.
But as he took a step, much to his astonishment, Archer began slowly floating up toward the cushioned ceiling.
Relax, buddy. Here, I got you. There you are. Relax.
We've got some magnetic boots that we put on once we've leveled off. They should be under your seats.
Archer put his on, not quite able to close even the largest pair, and began nimbly, for him, walking up the aisle, looking sick as a dog.
How high are we?
28 miles. Flying about 7 times the speed of sound at ground level. 5,000 miles per hour. We are in free fall, as you say.
You feeling better, Archer?
Food. More.
The guards quickly acquiesced, not wanting to face the wrath of the hungry mutant American.
You know, I'm a little curious about the effects of weightlessness. Do you mind?
Okay, but don't try anything.
You know, if you shoot me, you'll more than likely blow a hole through the jet. And at this height, you might as well blow up the ship.
I know, Roxen. That's why I'd rather you not try anything.
Right.
Under the watchful eyes of the guards, he released himself from the magnetic shoes and leaped up into the air, tucking his legs in under him. He went into a spring that accelerated faster and faster the more he pulled into a tighter circle. His years of physical training and his martial arts abilities made him quickly understand how to move in zero gravity. The Doomsday Warrior took off like an acrobat, soaring around the interior of the jet like some airborne porpoise. Even the guards were impressed, lowering their rifles as they watched the gymnastic performance. It felt wonderful, like being a child in a dream when one could fly by merely flapping one's arms. He pushed his body to the limits, trying every angle, every torque of hips and arms that he could think of. He glanced down at the guards and realized that he could easily take them out. A quick push off the top steel ribbed ceiling, and he would be down upon them like a wolf among the chickens. But he wanted to meet Vasily. Who knew where such an encounter would lead? After about 15 minutes of weightless gymnastics, Roxen returned to his seat.
That was quite the show, Roxen.
Well, it's not every day that a man gets to fly. You know, I've been wondering. Where did they find you?
Where did they... I was conscripted in Iceland. I've tinkered with machinery all my life. And when I hit 18, they sent me the letter. I had just married and had a baby on the way. So, running wasn't really an option. technical knowledge pretty much gave me my choice of deployment. So here I am, serving the fatherland by getting to maintain their shuttles. Plus, I get to go to space every once in a while. And every time I do, we fly right over Reykjavik. It's kind of like visiting my family, if only for a little bit.
That sounds nice.
Yeah, I like keeping these ships in tip-top shape. Keeps me out of trouble, you know?
Yeah, I know.
The Doomsday Warrior sat back in his seat and stared out the window. Far below, Earth could be seen, its oceans and continents like a child's jigsaw puzzle fitting perfectly together. The planet seemed so beautiful, fragile from way up here. The devastation that had been done disappeared at such a height. The planet seemed so small, so vulnerable from 28 miles up. A living, breathing thing that wished only to heal its wounds and create life once again. Roxxon sat back in his seat and remembered what the Glowers had taught him, how they had taken him on a mind excursion into the energy currents of the Earth. He closed his eyes and sank deep into the meditative state that the strange race had taught him. It took time without the Glowers' help, but after about 10 minutes, he felt his consciousness begin to rise up and drift free of the physicality that was Ted Roxxon. Pure energy, he drifted through the molecular structure of the jet and soared down through the atmosphere. He could feel the cosmic rays shooting down from space, the gravitational pull of the planet, the atmospheric currents flashing through the skies. He flew across the vast cleansing oceans, feeling their tidal swells, the undulations of the waves as they traveled from continent to continent. He dropped lower onto the countries that had once been Europe and saw the people in all their misery, ragged and ill-nourished, hopelessness etched in their eyes, as all that they had was consumed by Russian state. He felt their hearts bursting with pain, their children dying. He dropped lower and lower onto the planet and felt it, the soil, the rocks moving just beneath the surface, taking the radioactive poisons deeper down into its burning core, trying to neutralize them. In spite of the charnel ground that the war had created, the planet forgave and tried to return to its pure state, tried to purify the soil and the streams in an attempt to recreate itself in the image of a century before. The Doomsday Warrior saw the thousands of villages, the people reduced to a primeval state of savagery, the Russian military fortresses never more than 100 miles apart with their hordes of food and purified water. He felt that his heart was about to burst, so much pain and suffering. It was beyond the ability of a man to change. So much destruction. And yet, in the midst of his anguish, Rock heard them.
Yes, Roxxon, yes. You must see it all. See it. Don't turn away. This is the Earth as it is. You must understand it all. For you are the man whose destiny it is to change things.
Their spirit filled him. And somehow, in the midst of his visions of death and despair, came a new feeling. The spirit of the heart of man. It never stopped trying to survive. This was why it was all worth it. The soul of man itself. The mind, the greed, that was the poison. But the soul, the eternal essence of the human creature, this was the indestructible thing, more brilliant than the exploding supernovas that he could sense far above him, deeper than the oceans. He felt the purity, the nobleness of humanity, and it filled him with a glowing fire that he had never known. Renewed, Roxxon let himself drift back up to the skies. Borne aloft by the winds, the heat rising from the sun-baked plains, like an invisible balloon, he floated back up into the thin reaches of the atmosphere. Ahead, he saw the Russian jet piercing the dark heavens. Slowly, his lids opened, and he was back in himself. He felt his body again, and the weight of it took a few seconds to get used to after the absolute freedom of the mind excursion. The panel above his seat was lit, and an icon of a landing plane was flashing. in less than an hour, Ted Roczen would be in Russia. Rock was surprised that there were no curtains on the windows of the 20-foot-long sedan that carried them from the airport. He and Archer stared out the windows in fascination as they zoomed along a superhighway filled with traffic toward the Emerald City-like vista before them. Never had he imagined Moscow would look like this. 200-story skyscrapers with rapier tops, the sun glinting off the spires, which seemed to pierce the low strontium-tinged clouds. But as they drew closer, the vision tarnished. Instead of glitter, he saw many of the windows of the huge buildings were broken. Some of the towers partly in ruins. He noted rust marks down the sides of the smaller stone structures. The stench in the air began to rise. Garbage and raw sewage floating into the Volga River's turbulent waters. The highway ran along the edge of the mighty river, passing groups of sullen workers carrying loads of firewood and produce on towering baskets balanced precariously on their heads. Then, his vision transfixed on a terrible sight. All along one section of the riverbank were crucifixes. Nailed on them were nearly naked men and women, most motionless and slumped forward, their hands and feet nailed tightly into the blood-soaked wood. Hundreds of them, with but a few still alive enough to gaze up at the passing car with unfathomable pain in their foggy eyes.
Who are they?
Dissidents. You know. Social revisionists, artists, hooligans, gypsies. No Americans today, in honor of the premier's special guest. There will be none while you're here. And maybe never. I've heard rumors, if negotiations... But you will see.
Bastards.
Several miles off, Roczen noticed a large dome rising from the flat land around it.
What's that?
Classified. It's why we beat you Americans 100 years ago. Our technology was more powerful than yours.
They drove through the crowded streets of Moscow at high speed, forcing pedestrians to leap out of the way of the speeding sleek black limo, red flags on the hood snapping crisply in the wind. Then they entered Red Square, filled with throngs of Russian sightseers. Rock gazed with fascination at the capital of the Soviet Empire, the high walls of the Kremlin, St. Basil's Church with its bizarre domed towers, the tombs of Lenin and Drubkin, the premier who had ordered the strike on America, the Kremlin.
We're here.
Here?
This is it, the Kremlin. We're in the interior lot right now to prevent any undesirables from seeing you here. You'll be escorted by Advisor Rahala. And here he is now.
Good day. I am Rwanda Rahala, the Premier's aide and advisor. I welcome you to the Kremlin on his behalf. I trust you have been well treated since you were informed of the meeting.
Actually, we have.
Please, follow me. After you.
I'd rather you take the lead, thanks.
Very well.
They walked inside the Kremlin down a plush, spotless red carpet. The air was frigid, air-conditioned. Not that it was hot outside, but for the smell that permeated everywhere in Moscow from the garbage-filled Volga. The two free fighters followed Rwanda Rahala through a series of immense, chandeliered rooms filled with wall murals of the revolution. Finally, they came to a small, book-lined room.
The premier study. Do make yourself comfortable, gentlemen. Perhaps some wine? Chateauneuf de Pape 78. That's 1978, gentlemen. Care to try some?
Sure.
Now, this wine is beyond price. For one to truly take in the complexities of its many aromas, one must first swerve the...
Archer!
A wine beyond price must be savored, tasted, not gulped.
It's good?
Yes. The delicate high notes contrast with its complex... Ah, but where is my head? Our distinguished guests, this is Premier Vasily.
The Premier walked in from a side door. He was a frail-looking man with age spots covering his deeply lined face. He moved a bit shakily, but his eyes were as clear and bright as a summer sun. He moved slowly toward Roxanne and shook his hand with a soft grip.
No formalities here, Mr. Roxanne. We are equals. I trust you understand the importance of this meeting for your people. Peace, Mr. Roxanne. Peace.
They stared at one another for several moments, trying to take a measure of the other. Then Premier Vasily sat down behind a dark, ancient wooden desk.
Now, Mr. Roxanne and Mr.
Archer is his name. He's taciturn.
Ah, yes, Mr. Archer. I am sorry for the inconveniences my nephew, the well-meaning but inept president...
President of nothing.
Of course, Mr. Roxanne, that will be negotiated too, his status in your land. But these peace talks between us, never forget we are doing this in order to save lives, to save the environment, further damage, to...
To ensure that you will have enough troops you can pull out of the struggle in America to fight your losing battles elsewhere. I know what's going on across the world.
No, not at all. I am a man of peace, interested only in sparing our planet and its people any more suffering. But to be a man of peace in such difficult times, I am willing to make some generous concessions. But we must not rush. You are no doubt tired from your long journey. There is time enough for our talks. You will be shown all the hospitality afforded the most honored of foreign visitors. Until tomorrow, gentlemen.
They spent the night in palatial rooms with bars on the windows. A feast of exotic foods was brought to their quarters by a virtual army of waiters, each with a different steaming meal on a silver platter. After they had eaten their fill and were preparing to sleep, in oversized canopy beds that must have dated back to Tsarist Russia, the door opened and four young women marched past the elite guards in the hall and toward the two free fighters. The Americans stared at the bevy of beauties with wide eyes. Each was dressed in shimmering gossamer gowns that revealed all their charms. And there was plenty to reveal. One of them, a brunette with hair falling to her waist and deep brown eyes as moist as a doe's, walked forward seductively.
We are here for your pleasure.
The girls, none older than 20, looked at the two free fighters. Roxanne, with his chiseled, rugged features and a body of tanned, sculpted muscle, and Archer, 7 feet of hairy, steel-hard flesh. Rock turned to Archer, who looked to be sweating profusely.
Have you ever...
No.
Well, I can't think of any better way to break you in than right now. Ladies, he's all yours.
Archer's face was aglow with the nervous, blushing enthusiasm of a boy, both frightened and wildly aroused. One woman he had dreamed of for years. But four?
But Mr. Roxanne...
I've made my decision. It's Archer's turn to have a good time.
In the other room, the four women who had gone with Archer were wild with excitement. As they had undressed him for his bath, revealed before their wide eyes was the largest male organ they had ever seen. They exclaimed over it, a little frightened of such a tool, but eager to sample its abilities. Archer let them do the work. It was clear they knew more about the arts of lovemaking than he, but he was eager to learn. First one, then the other mounted his stiff staff, hardly able at first to get it into them. But once fully inside, they rode the steel, hard spear with mad delight as the others rained kisses and caresses on the free fighter's bear-sized physique. They undulated through the long night, taking turns with the apparently untiring archer, who was more than willing to be used in such pleasurable pursuits. The next morning, Roxanne couldn't help but smile as he saw Archer's tired, but happy face.
Hey there, Archer. How you doing?
Archer-like.
Coffee's by the sink. Come in.
Breakfast will be served in 10 minutes. Don't bother leaving. It will be served in your room.
They ate a hearty breakfast, once again brought in by a squadron of servants, and then were brought down to a large council chamber with Russian flags covering the walls. They were seated at a long conference table that stretched nearly 50 feet down the center of the hall. Soon they were joined by the slow-moving Vasily and nearly 10 of his political staff.
Good day to you both. I trust you had a fine night?
We did. Thank you for the hospitality.
Did you not care for the women we had sent to you?
Huh? Oh, no, they were fine. I wanted Archer to...
Or perhaps you did not feel comfortable taking in their pleasures because of Kim back home?
What? How do you know about Kim?
Well, we certainly do now. Just reminding you, Roxen, though you may see the Russian government as a crumbling antique, there are many things we still do very well. Espionage, for instance. Just keep this in mind during our talks.
The negotiations around the polished table lasted nearly all day as Rock and the Reds haggled over every point of a possible treaty. Food and beverages were brought in every few minutes with a wide selection for every possible taste. Rock had no intention of carrying out the provisions of the slowly negotiated treaty. Besides, he wasn't an elected representative of the new American government anyway, something the Russians couldn't understand. To them, Roxen was a man of power. His words would be heeded by the free fighters. The Doomsday Warrior was biding his time. He had already developed a plan of sorts, but the moment was not yet right to strike. Better that the Russians believe he was here to make peace. Then their guard would drop. Any doubts Premier Vasily had that Roxen was not sincere disappeared over the next 3 days of intense argumentation. The famed resistance fighter did his best to wring the most favorable possible terms, short of removal of all Russian forces from the United States. The agreement that they at last worked out pulled the Reds much further than they had wanted to go. Vasily looked through the final draft of the peace treaty. The Premier had given away more than he wanted to get the peace, but he needed to divert his forces to the battles in China and India, both overrun and cut off from Russia by the Mu'abir, the Flame of Allah and his fanatical legions of horsemen. Roxen carefully read each provision before signing them. 1. The Soviet Union will arrest and put on trial Colonel Kilov, director of KGB forces, for crimes against humanity and the ecology. 2. The USSA will elect a president who will replace General Zhabnov. Zhabnov will become vice president, but retain his role as commander-in-chief of all armed forces. Foreign policy shall remain the domain of the Russian command. 3. The USSR will not use atomic or chemical weapons anywhere in the world. Biological weapons that attack only humans and remain airborne and toxic for less than 12 hours will be allowed. 4. Internal affairs of the USSA will be governed by an American police force, although the Russian military presence will remain. The crowning point of achievement for Vasily, and for which he had given up much, was 5. The free fighters will turn over the technology for the black beam weapons to the Soviet Union. These can be used by Vasily when all other negotiations had failed to fight insurrections anywhere but the USSA. 6. All food shipments to the Soviet Union will be increased 5% a year until the present yearly figure was doubled. Otherwise, the entire agreement is canceled. 7. American pacification teams will visit sections of the Soviet fortresses in America and make them understand that the treaty prohibits revolt or attacks on Soviet staff or technicians. 8. The free fighters will use their skills to have Roxen help negotiate a treaty with the Mu'abir for the cessation of hostilities along Russia's southern border.
Well, Roxen?
It looks like we have a deal.
Rock and Vasily shook hands and the 8 provisions of the treaty were initialed by each man. Vasily stood up on wobbly legs and gave Roxanne a weak bear hug, then kissed him on both cheeks. At last, thought Rahala, perhaps Africa will be next. Roxanne was handed one final piece of paper by Vasily.
What's this?
A mere formality. A part of the treaty that will not be promulgated in the USSA, and it will remain in my vault here in the Kremlin. That is the only copy. You must sign it in order for the rest of the treaty to be in force.
9. In the event of the American partner to this agreement failing to meet their obligations, then the Supreme Soviet State reserves the right to carry out the following. Any large-scale insurrection of the American people will result in a massive ICBM strike at their rebel staging areas, particularly the Rocky Mountains. You expect me to sign this?
I just want you to see the obvious. You needn't worry about your American friend seeing Article 9. For your benefit, it will not be made public. I want you to know that we will back up the provisions of this treaty with overwhelming might.
You don't even have ICBMs anymore.
Oh, but we do. There are still many functioning silos deep underground in the Caucasus Mountains.
But that would mean more radioactivity. Not just for America, but the entire world. The ecology is already...
I said maybe, Roxanne. But should you disobey the provisions of the treaty which I have bent backward to offer the best possible terms out of my desire for peace, there will be nothing that I will be able to do. Our great satellite and missile command complex, right here on the outskirts of Moscow, will direct a total counterblow against your rebel fighters. And this time, it will be the end. I don't wish to further damage our planet, but the world must hold together with one supreme capital, Moscow.
Yeah, I see. You're just like the rest, Vasily.
The treaty would bring time, precious time, until Rock could find a way out of these walls and destroy the enemy's very heart, the control center. It had to be the towering dome that he had seen on the way in from the airport.
Wake up, buddy. It's time. We're breaking out and taking out their ICBM station, too. Now, come on. They've got our weapons stored about 3 doors down the hall. You ready?
Rock and Archer kill.
Good. Shh. Nobody here. Let's go. Here we are. Locked. Archer, will you do the honors? Right. Still no guards. Guess they really did think we had changed our tune.
Archer!
Where? There's your crossbow. Yeah, it's sealed. It's sealed on all sides in plexiglass. Maybe this statue... Damn it! It's airtight. Archer! Bring me that samovar next to you.
Hmm?
Samovar, it's the silver tea kettle. It's electric. Right. Now hold the case while I heat it from below. Now, the steam will heat the air inside the case, which will expand and put pressure on the sides until the case bursts open. That's one crossbow for you, Archer. Now, let's check our escape route.
They looked out of the window. Hundreds of feet above the luminous trails of ground traffic zipping along the wet pavement below. Rock surveyed the area outside the window. There, a ledge. He saw a decorative series of gargoyles. The only problem was the sculpture started nearly 40 feet away, and there was no ledge to crawl along to reach them in the window set between them that would, Rock hoped, lead to rooms unguarded by Imperial Kremlin troops.
Archer. Do you think you could make a shot, I mean a very good shot, with one of your steel arrows with a line attached to it? Jam the arrow into the gargoyle over there.
Hey!
Here, I'll tie this cord to it. There you go. Time to get us out of here.
Archer fitted the arrow into the firing slot on the crossbow.
Good shot. Seems pretty sure.
Archer watched incredulously as Rock stood on the sill and hauled himself up across the rope. Roxon reached the row of concrete faces and then motioned for Archer to make the journey. The giant's face fell as he looked first at Roxon and then down to the street below. With a gulp, he slung the bow over his shoulder and, praying silently to whatever gods the strange woodsman believed in, he started across. The cord stretched and quivered violently, as if protesting the weight on it. But it held. Archer was surprisingly agile for a man his size, and immensely strong. If nothing else, his fear of dropping propelled him quickly across the line. The two free fighters edged along the 2-foot-wide ledge beneath the gargoyles, hugging the wall as they moved one careful step at a time. Rock reached the large window and peered quickly inside. Empty. He tried it, and it opened easily. No one expected entry from the outside. Not at this height.
Let's go. Hold up. Okay, we're clear.
Moving like cats, they made their way down the carpeted hall, heading toward the elevators.
Guards just around the corner. On three. One, two. Shit. Well, the next one's mine. Now help me drag him to the utility closet. Now we're getting in the clothes. Well, I am.
Roxon put the brown Kremlin guard uniform over his own clothes. It was a tight fit, but it would have to do.
Now we just need a way to get outside. Stay behind me. We're going down to the basement. I'll signal when we're clear.
They took the elevator down to the basement. Roxon was prepared to strike out at any guard unfortunate enough to take the elevator at the same time. Dressed as he was, Roxon would have the element of surprise.
Okay, it's clear. Come on.
The two free fighters, after marching around the immense storage and boiler rooms, found 3 steel dumpsters filled with garbage. They reluctantly hid themselves under the rotting refuse. Fortunately, they didn't have to wait long. Within an hour, huge trucks drove down a ramp and loaded the garbage containers onto their backs. The trucks drove out through the Kremlin walls and down the now nearly deserted highway toward the dump at the outskirts of Moscow. When their truck slowed for a turn, the two free fighters leapt out. They were free in the heart of the Russian capital. They made it through twisting streets to the edge of a park that sat in the center of Moscow, complete with gardens and winding paths.
There! Over there!
Shit! Archer, follow me!
They sped back out of the park and into the narrow, dark streets that wound through the metropolis. In this section of the city, most of the buildings were run down, crumbling, obviously homes for the less fortunate of the Russian workers. Roxon knew that within minutes the entire area would be saturated with Reds. They turned a dark corner and found themselves in a dead end, facing a 20-foot-high brick wall. The troops closed in. Suddenly, they heard a sound just behind them. They rushed over, ready to battle, and saw a small man dressed in a black robe emerge from the open manhole. With hair white as snow and black wraparound sunglasses, he made quite a sight.
In here, friends.
Well, we don't really have a choice. Archer, get down here. Damn it. Suck in your gut. I'll pull.
I'll close the manhole. Excellent. They'll never come down here. Come on, follow me.
Their benefactor pulled out a pencil flashlight. And though dim, they were able to make their way through the 6-foot-wide sewer tunnel. They walked for nearly half an hour. Then the tunnel suddenly widened, and they stepped into a large open cavern. Roxon gasped. It was a subway station, old and dusty. A large group of similarly clad smallish men with the same white hair stood waiting. Rock stayed Archer's hands as he whipped up his crossbow.
Hold it, Archer. These are friends.
Rock hoped he was right. The black-robed men held weapons in their hands that were oddly shaped, almost like musical instruments from what he could make out in the dim light of the flickering electric chandeliers above. Rock stepped up to them and looked the group over.
You speak English?
Oh, we speak very good English. I be Yuri Goodman Chekhov, and these be my proud people, the dissidents they call us. We live down here, not too bright and cool. These be the old subway system of this big bad city. We like America. You know any jazz musicians in your country? They still play in nightclubs over there. Do you like Coltrane? Do you have a sax?
Are you all musicians? I see you're holding a clarinet.
Oh, this not a regular clarinet. This be weapon, too. Sonic boom boom. Understand?
I don't.
Here, I show you. Over there. There we go. Mouse key. Now we show your American jazz friends how we play instruments. Now, Mouski dead. See, do same thing to red troops, like gun. Only more fun to shoot. Dig us, American jazz friends. Where are your instruments? We could have groovy jam sessions. Why you not sit down with us in club called Fat Black Pushcat, and we play swinging stuff by Mingus and Ellington? If you don't have instruments, we loan. What you American hipsters play, vibes? An axe?
I'm not sure you understand. We're free fighters.
Ah, free fighters! Yeah, have not heard. No doubt big in Japan. You have big band sound. Do jitterbug, and with your sweetie you dance in PX?
They were led to a small shack at one end of the station. The dissidents sat around them at tables with candles in the center in the dark make-believe American-style coffee shop of the mid-1960s. How in God's name they had gotten photographs of such places or picked up all the lingo they used was beyond Roxon's comprehension. He looked around. The subway station was really more of a terminal. High marble walls with murals of proud Russian farmers in their bright red tractors, of workers holding wrenches as they worked inside huge factories. Drawings in red and blue and orange and black square tiles. Rock had to admire their beauty. He had never been a great fan of socialist realism art, but these had a certain primitive nobility. The dissidents had set up their permanent home within the terminal with sleeping bags and hammocks hung from ancient rusting lamps and pipes that ran along the walls and ceilings, which rose nearly 60 feet above the platforms. Tracks on each side of the terminal disappeared far off into the darkness. On one side sat a 10-car-long Russian subway, obviously not used for nearly a century. Its wheels rusted down into red metal dust. Its cars filled with decades of dirt and spiderwebs.
Call me Yuri. Or Goodman. Or Chekhov.
Yuri, how did this place get going?
Very good question. Years ago, the subways ran bopping through these groove tubes. But a big boom boom tube, one of yours, wipe out the north section. Reds let place rot like burgers and fries. We blew into the scene and just crashed here. Now, it's our permanent digs. You dig?
I see.
So, what's your scene? I mean, what kind of jive you into, really?
Well, tell me this. What do you think about the Russians?
The man? Square.
Right. You know the domed satellite and missile control center? I want to blow it up. Can you help us American jazz men play that tune?
Blow up the big egg? Why not shoot down red jazz haters with our clarinets and tubas? Why destroy pretty egg building?
It's their control center for launching ICBMs. Missiles. Damn it, wish Perkins was still with us. They shoot boom tubes across the planet to keep their people subjugated and afraid. Without it, they're just like us. People. Any killing they'd have to do, they'd have to do themselves.
That'd be different story, crazy swinger. If it can save the world for Glenn Miller dances and swinging times on crazy blue nights, then we try. What do you need?
Explosives. I don't suppose you have any.
Explosives? No. Why need? Oh, I see what you mean. Boom boom stuff.
Yes, boom boom stuff. Do you know where we can get some?
We got a whole room full. Used to build tunnel for new line before Mega Mothers hit. Got lots of boom boom. Enough to turn egg into red hot omelette.
Good. That's just what I wanted to hear.
Archer never liked being underground. He was a man of the open fields, the mountains. Even in Century City, Archer had felt claustrophobic. Here in the ancient Moscow subways, he felt doubly uncomfortable. Once outside the large terminal, the ceilings were oppressively low in sections, and Archer kept bending his 7-foot-plus frame for fear of scraping his head. He took to wearing an ancient World War II Russian army helmet provided by the dissidents. The next morning, Archer woke up early, before Rock, and headed off down the tunnel in search of the toilet facilities that the dissidents had shown him. He walked through the dark tunnel, lit by an occasional flickering light bulb that the Jasmine had strung up every few hundred feet, run by stolen electricity from passing power lines. Somehow, he managed to take a wrong turn and headed deeper into the depths, sure that he would stumble upon the tunnel latrine. Within minutes, he was completely lost within the labyrinth of the elaborate, unused Moscow subway system. He began rushing this way and that, desperately hoping he would stumble upon the way out. He could take on 20 men at a time, but to be lost underground scared the giant half to death. He pulled out the little penlight the dissidents had given him in Rock, but it was hardly enough to do more than dimly light up a few steps ahead. The immense free fighter was sure that he saw thousands of little green eyes peering at him from out of the impenetrable darkness of the endless tunnel. Rats? Mutated bugs? If they were big enough and would come forward, he would tear them apart. But no, they hovered in the distance, watching, waiting as he lost himself deeper within the subterranean world. At last, he came into one of the wider, chandeliered stations, with several of the lights still working. Here, the thousand green eyes disappeared, not wishing to enter the brightness. Archer sat down on a half-rotted passenger bench near the center of the station and tried to figure out just what the hell to do next. He saw a shiny object at one end of the seat and reached over. It was a small metal flute, probably one of the dissidents, dropped here by accident. The huge free fighter picked it up and lifted it to his lips. It didn't like music. It had been scared many times, nearly killed by the dissidents and their screaming musical weapons. It had no name. It was forever. It was simply it. It shifted its huge 800-pound frame, slurped the last of the old bones it was cracking to suck out the sweet marrow. But why eat stale things when fresh, warm musicians could be had? It was round like a ball with 7 arms, 7 red eyes, 7 legs, and 7 stomachs, each growling to be fed. It had been formed long ago out of the radioactive pollutants washed into the Volga's churning waters, coursing through the megapolis of Moscow. It had eaten an occasional lone boater then, long ago, before the sky changed color, before the river ran red with blood. It had retreated into the subways and the sewers, where the water ran a foul green. Now it ate rats and cats and ugly things, slimy and quick. And occasionally, a dissident, if he was foolhardy and was alone and lost. But it was hungry now for fresh meat. It hadn't eaten warm flesh for a long time. But now it was time to feed. It came down the tunnel running, not caring if it was heard, for how could anything stop it?
Thank you.
spotted multiple arms pulling out the stuck arrows as it disappeared. The thing vanished into the darkness. It knew the tunnels well and rushed to the side through an opening. It would come around from the back. Soon it would eat. Where the hell was it? Out of ammo. The rest of the arrows were back at the station, prepped for sharpening. The monstrous slime thing came slowly toward him. Archer backed down the platform slowly, keeping his eyes fixed directly on the approaching thing. Suddenly, it charged, moving at incredible speed for something so large and foul. Archer ran backward, not wanting to take his eyes from it. The thing rushed forward, knowing the time was right. Its dark jaws opened to their full extent as it could taste the prey just seconds away. Archer scrambled to get away, and his hand made contact with an 8-foot-long beam of rebar. The thing launched itself through the air, pushing up with all the strength of its 7 legs. Archer whipped the pole around, resting the bottom just under his armpit so it touched the stone floor. Archer jumped up, searching frantically around for another weapon, and ran a few yards. Then he turned and knew it was gone. A thin smile crossed his lips. He had won. Roxon would be proud. Somehow, Archer made his way back to the dissident's encampment. He emerged from the tunnel, coated with the thick green blood of the dead creature. The dissidents looked at him curiously as Roxon walked over with a grin on his face.
You look like you've been doing battle with an artichoke.
Artichoke!
He pumped his hands up and down to simulate the killing action of the spear.
Jesus, you smell.
Two of the dissidents waved for Archer to follow them, and they led him to their makeshift shower, using water siphoned off from a passing water main. Soon the free fighter was clean again, but he knew he would never quite be able to explain just what had gone on deep below the Moscow streets. The next day, if one could say day here in the unchanging subterranean world, Yuri Goodman brought in a wizened, stooped old man on crutches they called Satchmo, who spoke English better than the others of his clan.
I learned from the record covers, you understand? What style are you into, big boy? Bop, swing, cool, progressive.
Back at CC, I listened to Dixieland. Always loved it.
Oh, the roots, man, yeah. Cats dig the roots of swing. You're right. I understand you want explosives.
He wore no sunglasses, and Rock suddenly saw by his unmoving gaze that the man was blind.
Yes. But how can you show me where it is?
I have a sort of built-in radar for these tunnels. When the eyes go, the ears become sharper, you dig?
Archer and Rock, along with a small group of dissidents who held their instruments at the ready in case of trouble, followed the blind Satchmo through dim tunnels for nearly an hour and hundreds of twists and turns. Archer had to leave his crossbow behind, as they would need all the hands and pockets they could spare. Rats and other creatures scurried away as the party approached. At last, they reached a dusty storeroom filled with stolen goods. Everything from golf clubs to banana clips and old Russian rifles, and crate after crate of dynamite.
Help yourself. My generation were pack rats. We gathered our stuff from the city above. Many of us went up into the streets during the revolution of 2023 when we tried to retake Moscow. They all died. Only those who stayed in the tunnels and I was blind by then, survived.
Rock went through the crates, carefully examining the state of the goods. He found it all in apparently functioning condition, along with fuses and blasting caps. It would do. It would have to. After they lugged nearly a ton of the explosives back to the encampment, Rock wanted to test them just to make sure. With three of the dissidents leading him and Archer, they made their way several miles to an immense linking terminal where 10 sets of tracks met. The space was wide and high enough for Roxen to see just what the effects of the antiquated dynamite would be. They set 10 sticks in the curved wall of one of the tunnels with a 1 minute timer and ran back to safety.
3, 2, 1.
The explosives had torn out a 10-foot chunk of the solid rock.
This is perfect. Now, we need to scout out and find the structure's weak points. Security, maintenance, the sewer system. Once we make our way in...
There they are!
Oh, shit! The Russians found us!
Shit!
Everybody run!
Colonel Veselovsky's elite squad of MKVD troops broke into four 50-man units.
Get the two Americans! The two large men! Forget about the dissidents! I want those two! Flank them and ready the stun grenade!
Satchmo! Can't you kill them with your instruments?
There's too many! Too close! We have ways of escape, however! Follow us!
Satchmo!
Surrender, America!
Never! Gas! They've got gas!
Shit.
I knew it. These are the escaped free fighters. Quickly, to the surface with these two. Forget the dissidents for today. These are worth all those white-faced mutants put together. And a medal for every man here. The Premier will be serving us hors d'oeuvres from his own hand inside the Kremlin walls by tomorrow night.